Like in school, we learn the parts of a cell. You know, there's the cell wall, the nucleus, all this stuff. A virus is different, though. And I'd like to ask, you know, what is inside a virus?
This particular virus has a piece of RNA, ribonucleic acid, that contains the genes for how it functions in the world. And that's encased in a fatty lipid membrane that's just like a fat droplet. And out of that droplet, sticking out of it are viral proteins that you've seen in various pictures or cartoons. And that is how the virus engages and interacts with the cells of our body.
And that's why it's called the coronavirus. It looks like a crown with all those spikes.
Yes.
Can you explain how those spiky proteins on the surface of the virus allow it to infect our cells?
It just so happens that this virus takes advantage of a protein that is cellular.
On our cells.
Our cells, right. And its spike protein can interact with that receptor protein or protein on the cell surface. And then it's pulled into the cell after that interaction.
Do you think that the spiky protein that you mentioned on the virus, is that the part that a vaccine will target?
Yes, they're going to use that viral spike protein to generate vaccine against the virus. So if our bodies will make antibodies against that spike protein, and it will prevent that spike protein from interacting with the ACE2 receptor on our cells. And that's the goal of what we're working at right now.
What is it that makes this particular virus so dangerous?
So the virus, by using the spike protein on its surface, can filter down into our lower respiratory tract, bind with high affinity there, infect cells. And when those cells start dying, then the airways get filled up with cellular debris. And also, another very important issue is that not only is the virus killing respiratory tract cells, but it also is causing an inflammatory response, an immune response. Our bodies are trying to fight off this virus. And that inflammatory response seems to be sometimes under different conditions in different humans. If the immune response is not regulated properly, that inflammatory response can actually be part of why people are potentially dying from this virus. So it's the virus plus an overactive or unregulated immune response, particularly inflammation in the lungs, that is basically causing a large number of mortality.
I want to ask a little bit about the history of this. I read a study recently that says the COVID-19 virus is 96% identical to the virus found in bats. And it's interesting that just that 4% difference allowed it to jump to humans.
By chance, it had mutations that were generated in the bat that actually allowed it to infect us with greater affinity than typical of a virus jumping out of an animal to a human.
The COVID-19 virus is called SARS-2, but what is different about this current SARS virus than the one we saw in 2002?
People have no symptoms and are able to pass the virus off without having symptoms. Seems to be a little more prevalent in this case, and so that's why it's more insidious or a little more hidden, perhaps, than previous epidemic.
Just continuing with the SARS classic question, the good news about that was that it was contained, and we haven't seen that virus again, SARS-1. And I'm just wondering if that is possible, if you see that might be the case here with this one.
These viruses were not very well studied, particularly before the SARS classic. They are known to cause the common cold, and there are only a few researchers, really, that have been studying these viruses over the years. And so, therefore, our full understanding of their biology and also their immunology, how they affect our immune systems, is really poorly understood. So we don't know, for example, once we get infected by a coronavirus, whether we become resistant to that virus from then on or if we can suffer a reinfection. The thinking is currently is that we don't suffer reinfections immediately. Some of the Chinese data indicates that reinfections immediately after the infection do not occur, so that's good. And it also indicates that the people working on vaccines will have a fighting chance of developing a vaccine that is meaningful, you know, because the good news about this is that these viruses, although they mutate and can change, they don't change as nearly as rapidly or quickly as like HIV or influenza virus. They seem to be, in general, the family seems to be more stable.
We're talking to Dr. Angelo DeLucia. He's a virologist at NeoMed. When do you think the outbreak will peak?
That's a huge question, right? Right now, as I can see it, we're still in the logarithmic phase of virus infectivity. And that means potentially for every case that you see, 5 to 10 cases will rise a week after that, or several days, a few days after whatever the case number is at the moment. Without knowing what our underlying population infectious rate is, it's very difficult to really analyze what that curve looks like.
Do you think the spread of the virus will slow once we get into warm weather?
The problem with that is that I think in Australia it's summer down there, and they have infections ongoing, and so all bets are off in terms of whether the heat will in fact destroy the virus.
Is it likely to return again in the fall?
Again, we don't know that answer to that. But by then, we certainly will have at least some decent attempts at a vaccine program that will be productive, and also antiviral therapies that should be productive. So we'll be able to ward it off. We'll be much better prepared, even if it does come back. Although you can't predict one way or the other at this time.
What would be the main lessons that you think we should learn from this outbreak?
The key lesson is to limit panic and fear. Preparation is absolutely critical. And part of why we're not as prepared today, because we haven't spent the money that we needed to study these things.